Speaking of Reliability, a podcast with good friends talking with you about reliability engineering topics. Welcome to Speaking of Reliability. This is Fred Schenkelberg.
And this is Diana Deeney. Hi, Fred.
Hey, Diana. Good to talk to you again. It's been a little while, and I understand that your short break with your podcast, Quality by Design, if I remember the name right. I
can see Quality During Design.
During Design. Mm-hmm. And is back on the air. You got your first episode out. I think we're recording, and it was out last week, but hopefully when this episode airs, you should have another or maybe two out by then. So welcome back to the podcasting ranks, and glad you had some time to chat again today.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks for inviting me back. I enjoy podcasting and I missed it. So I'm glad to be doing it again.
Well, one of the things that, and you know, we ask every single episode, well, almost, for listeners to ask questions. And one of the issues I've run into is there's a handful of barriers to especially reliability type questions. Usually a lawyer, if it's a big recall or something like that, the lawyers swoop in and you can't talk about it and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And very few people like the idea of talking about failures and problems and can't solve this and everything else. And, you know, part of Ascendo, I should say, reliability, I learned from an Italian colleague that it's Latin and in Italian, it's Ascendo. The double C is pronounced differently. So
I did not. Okay.
Ascendo. Sounds cooler anyway. But the part of the idea with Ascendo Reliability and this podcast is a place where people can ask questions. And we do get occasional questions, and we get answers back to people and then expand on it, usually, and learn more about it in the podcast. Yet, you know, I don't see a lot of questions a lot of times. I don't know. And you're more, well, you're on the East Coast. Do people on the East Coast ask more questions? Maybe it's just a West Coast thing.
I think it might be a worldwide thing.
Okay.
I don't get a lot of questions. I get comments sometimes that, oh, you know, I could use that in my work. But it's not so much a question about anything particular or even general, really. Yeah. Yeah. And I guess sometimes you get to the point, you know, if you're having trouble, like you said, there's the legal problems that you may be facing, or you don't want to talk about failures. But then the other thing is sometimes, what do you even ask?
Well, that's a good point. Yeah. I know early on in my career, when I first started, and I'm sure I've talked about this story more than once, my boss came in and was asking me to do an accelerated life test. I didn't know that was even a thing. You know, I thought he was asking me to fly to Italy for 20 years to see if this thing would work for 20 years.
Yeah. That sounds nice.
It was in the Alps, too.
It didn't work out, huh?
Didn't work out.
It's a shame.
Yeah, years later, I did cross one of the bridges, and it was clear of ice, and I suspect that it had that product I was working on in it. The rest of the road was a disaster, but the bridge was beautiful. So, and that was where we were putting these heating cables, was in the bridges. But anyway, so I was glad that it worked. Maybe it was somebody else's product, but the concept worked. But anyway, I think there wasn't web browsers yet. There was internet, and I had a computer that had a dial up and found gopher sites and, you know, chat boards and stuff like that. And ended up connecting, I was on some statistics-ish reliability type site and asked a couple of questions, and a professor out of, and I'm drawing a complete blank, it's in Canada someplace. I want to say McLean, but that's not it. Some professor, and he was working on life data analysis type stuff, and he chimed back in and said, oh, you know, tell me more about that. And we got on the phone and we talked, and I hadn't met him for about 2 years when I was working on through that project and we published a paper together. It was my first technical paper I published, and it was on the first project I did in reliability. And it made a huge difference for how we, as a company, then tested and analyzed how our products degraded over in performance over time. So it was a great deal.
That's really cool.
And it was very much that feeling of, you know, if I ask 10 people, maybe I'll get an answer. And so there was these like discussion forums or chat boards type stuff. And it wasn't full of hate and vile and, you know, spammers and all other stuff. It was, you know, there's probably 100 people in this one particular group that really wanted to, you know, have a place to ask questions. And as a return for that, they would answer questions if they could. And years later, I was at Hewlett-Packard, and we had, we called it the DFR list. And it was just a, I don't know what it's called. It was an email service, like a message board. So if you sent a message to a particular address in it, it would get rebroadcast to everybody on the list. And the protocol was, if you ask a question, you can, you know, answer back to the person directly so that you don't get one message sparking 20 responses and then each of those 20 get 20 responses. You don't get flooded. You respond back directly. And then it was incumbent on the person asking the question to summarize it, saying, here's the best answer, and then posting that as the resolution to their question. So it was a very low volume system, but it had, I don't know, 4,000 people on it across the company.
Now, this was a homegrown thing that you developed just for your company.
Oh, I didn't develop it. No, that was Dick Moss. He had been there for years prior to me. And it was, we had the email, internal email system, and he knew about this type of service. And it was, I don't know if he invented it or grew it, you know, created it on his own. I know that the mechanical engineers had something similar. But it was kind of the philosophy of, and it was throughout the culture at HP, is there's almost always somebody here in this organization that knows the right answer for you. You just have to ask. So it was, we were encouraged to go ask questions. So that really fit into my previous experience, just getting on board with accelerated testing and stuff like that. I didn't even know what it was, and very quickly found some great resources and references and support and backing, and actually, you know, worked with another person in detail on the problem once we got our NDA stuff signed, and made a huge difference. But it was started with just very naive questions. Not even sure what I was asking, but I do remember that hesitancy. HP's one was, there was no NDAs, that because we're all in the same company kind
right.
of thing. And, but yeah. even then, I would get a phone call every now and then when I was managing that list and a handful of other parts of that project. You know, Fred, I'm not really supposed to talk to you. Don't tell anybody I called. It's like, what? What's the matter? And so, oh, we had a visual thermal event. A what? Well, I can't say that four-letter word that starts with F. What?
Event.
you mean a rapid disassembly? A chemical disassembly? Is that what you're talking about? Goes, yeah. You got the idea. It's like, okay. And apparently the lawyers just completely locked all the engineers down. And so he was asking me to call the vendor to ask a couple of questions to clear stuff up for him. It was, so within the company, it was much more freely, you know, hey, I'm working on this project and I'm trying to solve this problem or whatever. And, or how do I go about this? Any good reference for this? My, you know, I checked the assumptions on this data analysis process and it didn't work. What do I do now? You know, those kinds of questions. And we would get, in its heyday, it was probably 10 questions a week. So it was pretty active. But there were very, very few barriers. And there was lots of promotion whenever we did webinars, whenever we did in-class, you know, classes at different sites or even remote classes. We always promoted this list and to ask questions. And so, but where do we go now? At LinkedIn, you see some questions like that every now and then, but I don't know where our peers go these days to get questions answered. Google, I guess.
Well, yeah, now the AIs for that, right?
Yeah.
Bard, or I guess they're calling it Gemini. Yeah. Which just scours the web for an answer, but you still have to check it.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen things on Quora, but it seems like it's a lot of students that are on there.
Yeah.
Students that are asking professionals a question about, you know, how to do something. But I haven't really seen a lot of professional to professional conversations on that. And Reddit there's not a whole lot going on with engineering on Reddit that I've seen either.
Yeah. IT stuff and software stuff. And I mean, some fields of engineering tend to be really, you know, hacking a game is really, really popular. Complaining about Super Bowl ads is a popular subthread or whatever they call it, subreddit. But I get you. It's not a place I would go as, you know, a mechanical engineer or electrical engineer or reliability person and go, oh, what do you think of this idea? Or what's this theory? Or where do I find a good reference for? I don't see that very much.
No. And you know, the professional societies are trying to offer that.
Mm-hmm.
And I know some of the professional societies have different subgroups within them, but some of them are so large, that it's like you put a question out there and it goes into a void where people aren't monitoring it, or it goes so wide that you don't get the person that you need and you're not redirected. Or if it's a professional society that's focuses on certifications, you get a lot of questions about, I'm studying for the certification exam.
Mm-hmm.
Not too much else, although sometimes you can get some good conversations going on those professional society sites. But I, not for like discussing failures,
no,
and stuff like what you're talking about.
Yeah, usually the ones I've seen at a couple different societies tended to be, you know, what's a good reference for? Is this the right approach for? What are the assumptions underneath, you know, this? It's usually some statistics formula or technique, or, you know, is detection necessary in an FMEA? You know, and I think that's part of the barriers is the NDA type stuff.
Mm-hmm.
What I found over time is that there's a handful of people that, you know me through Ascendo primarily, and they'll send me a question that is obviously a shielded real question from the real work they're doing. You know, they don't tell me what the data set is or what the units are, stuff like that. They basically mask the data set and going, well, I'm getting this behavior and I don't think that's right. And I'm like, yeah, you're right. That's not right. You know, but those are more rare, and it's more like you were talking about. It's more the, you know, pretty generic type questions. And I think part of why I think there's a decrease in that, I think there's two pieces to it. One is Google's pretty good. If I got a question about a particular formula or how to set up a control chart, well, there's 1,000 articles on Ascendo that cover stuff like that. And I figure the traffic to the site is because they're embarrassed to go ask their boss about how to do this. They look it up first and then move on. Yet there's always this gray area. Is this the right control chart, for example, for this particular circumstance? And if you don't know about, you know, discrete control charting, if you just don't know about it at all, never heard of them, you try to force it into a X bar R chart and it's like, well, you know, that doesn't really work. You've got count data. You can't assume that it's continuous for what you're doing. And if you don't know that that difference exists, it's really hard to ask the right question. And you ask a question about why is this acting weird? Might be their starting point. And that's goes back to that initial, well, I don't want to expose my ignorance type stuff. There's issues with that, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. Just Well, and that kind of goes along with not wanting to share failures, mm-hmm. not willing to share that you don't know something or about something. But, you know, sometimes too, you get into a company that produces a certain product and an analysis kind of goes a certain way. Mm-hmm. And, you know the steps and you're doing the analysis. But what might happen is you may have developed a new test or had a particular failure that's different from what you normally do. So you can literally do the same analysis that you've been doing all along, but maybe it's not applicable. Like you were saying with the control charts, mm-hmm. Where, yeah, you might continue using the same control chart, not even knowing that there's other ones around. And those kind of checks, man, they really only come up if somebody else reframes that for you or notices that problem and points it out. Mm-hmm. I guess that's part of your ignorance sounds mean, but it's just the ignorance of not knowing what you're doing and you just keep doing the same thing.
Well, I don't know how many times in the show we've talked about check your assumptions, be humble and ask, doubt yourself right away and double check your work. And just because it came out of a computer doesn't mean it's correct, kind of thing. But the part of it is there's two pieces, I think. One is encouraging people to be willing to ask questions. And it's kind of like my teacher in grade school. There's no such thing as a dumb question. And of course, then I spent the rest of the week trying to figure out the dumbest question whatsoever. And she didn't back away. She always addressed the question and sometimes told me to go over there.
In the corner. Over there.
kind of thing. But the part of it is encouraging it. It's okay to ask questions. You know, there's no fee, there's no cost. It's, ask the question. And if there's really no answers to the question, if you're asking a theoretical question and that's a great unknown, well, then, yeah, we don't have an answer for that one. We don't really know. And in a way, it's not a satisfactory resolution. The vast majority, though, times we're dealing with engineering type questions or management type questions of how do I get this project funded or how do I know if this result is correct or things like that. The first step is people have to recognize it's okay to ask a question. And so this podcast is built on that idea that, yeah, ask questions. And the second part is that, it's like you said, when you go to a bigger professional society or a big website that has a bunch of stuff on it and your question goes out there and it might go to 1,000 people, might see it, yet 1,000 people figure the other 1,000 are going to answer it. And they don't want to go first, or I don't have time for this, or I don't want to check yet another website looking for somebody's question. Some of the, I was doing a bunch of work with my audio system and I was on the support forum, and there are people on these support forums for different products and different styles of systems and so on, and cars, I imagine too, that's their hobby. They go answer questions for people on these forums. And I got great advice. Some of it I don't know how to implement, so I'm going to go back and ask some more questions. Yet, what's the, not Kickstarter, crowdsourcing. If you got a question, crowdsource it, get it out there. The trouble is that some forums don't have a moderator or a...
Right.
Somebody to make sure you get an answer. And then, if somebody asks you a question and you're not really sure about it, you certainly can, and I believe you have on occasion. It's like, Chris or Fred or, somebody else, what do you think? I don't know how many questions I've handed off to Chris, especially when they get deep in the theoretical mathematics type stuff. I'm like, go talk to Chris.
Yeah, you'll get a referral to somebody that can help you a little more.
Yeah.
Part of it might just be knowing how to ask the question when you're faced with those failures and you don't have an NDA and you don't want to publish all the bad things that are happening, but you need help. Like you said, one of the first steps is just to check your assumptions.
Yep.
So you could ask a question about the assumptions you're making given a certain problem. But something that has really helped me to be better at asking questions are these AI prompted things. So I just can't ask a question and get a good answer.
Right.
I need to set up the scenario. So I say, I'm doing this and I want to get this kind of a goal. And I'm very specific about the scenario, what I'm looking for. And then I even give more details after a hashtag, you know, a link to a website or something. And then I get a better answer out of the system. And I think the same could be true for, you know, reliability questions that are crowdsourced. Just, you know, giving the scenario, even if you can't get into the specifics of it.
Yeah.
But paint the picture and give the scenario and share where you think the problem is or where you're at in the process and what you're trying to get out of it. I think being able to phrase questions like that, even when crowdsourcing, learning how to do that might improve your results and your answers that you get.
Yeah, much better than a screenshot of your textbook question that you're trying to answer for class.
Yeah.
I've seen a few of those on LinkedIn, and people come back going, that looks like a problem that you need to solve for your class. Yeah, you don't see it very often anymore, but I've seen those a few times. But that might be an idea for a whole other podcast, how to ask better questions, you know, or even use ChatGPT or similar systems well, which I've limited experience with. Maybe you and Kirk, because he's been all hot on the ChatGPT stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. No, but anyway, it's one of those things that there's a lot of smart people in the world, and there's a lot of people with great experience and different experience in different industries and so on. And sometimes your problem has been solved in the building next door. And if you don't ask, you don't know. And you can save yourself a whole pile of time and headache and frustration by just asking a question and checking your assumptions and so on. So once again, encourage listeners to ask questions. And so what's on your mind? What kind of questions and topics and issues and stuff that are you facing on a day-to-day basis? We're recording this on a Monday morning, so it's prime time to have your week's schedule resolved with a couple of well-placed questions. So your next Monday morning after you hear this, ask us a question. Head over to ascendoreliability.com/go/SOR. You can find a couple of ways to get in touch with us. Diana and I and the other hosts of the show are available through LinkedIn and through our About pages. We've got contact information and email addresses and all kinds of stuff. Lots of ways for you to get in touch. So my final question, Diana, is I think that's a wrap for this one.
Yeah, I think so.
See, I got an answer right away. What a deal.
I feel set up.
Yeah, that wasn't a fair question. So thanks so much, Diana, and we'll talk to you again soon.
Thanks, Fred.
Thanks for listening to Speaking of Reliability. We invite you to join the conversation if you have a question or a topic that you think we should discuss in a future show. Please let us know. You can find a comment box below the episode show notes, or just leave a note as part of a review on iTunes.